Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order. Today is Monday, April 8th, 2024. Let the record reflect the time is 3:18 p.m. Today we have present Representative Sadler, Representative Prox, Representative Wright, Representative Fields, Vice Chair Ruffridge, and myself, Chair Sumner. The staff will be assisting us today are Kevin Allen with House Records, Zachary Lawhorn with the LIO, and Clark Bickford, my staff and committee aide to House Labor and Commerce. Today in committee, we have four items on the agenda. We're going to start with HB 55, Extend Workforce Investment Board Allocations from Representative Carrick's office. We have one conceptual amendment to address today before bringing the bill to a committee vote. We're also going to roll HB 226, pharmacists, benefit managers to a different day. Let the record reflect that Representative Carrick has joined us at 3:19 p.m. Starting with House Bill 55, Extended Workforce Investment Board, Vice Chair Ruffridge, do you have a motion?
Yes, thank you, Chair Sumner. I would move Conceptual Amendment 1 to HB 55, changing the extension of this from 2 years to 1 year. Object.
Okay, there is objection. Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there's just benefit and stability, and 2 years will give us enough time to, if we wish, change the allocations. I guess I would also note if we really felt like we got consensus and wanted to change the allocations sooner than 2 years, we could certainly do that. So I think I'll maintain my objection on that one.
Representative Carrick.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. I will also offer the same comment, echo the comments from Representative Fields. This legislation, when it was last reauthorized 2 cycles ago in 2020, was reauthorized for 1 year, both under the time pressure of it being 2020 and also under the idea that we would come back, would be able to make quick decisions about funding allocations and then change those. When that did not happen in a 1 year period, it was decided in 2021 to offer a 3 year extension and put forth an audit, which was accomplished. I would just offer that in the years of experience I've had with this legislation, setting a 1 year sunset date is not going to accomplish what we hope it will accomplish. It is not going to put the time pressure on these allocations and the decisions we need to make about them. And it's also not going to provide the stability for the providers that are listed that is very valuable in the intervening time while we make those policy calls as a legislature. So I would echo some of those comments and just add to it.
Well, thank you, Representative Carrick. And I might mention that there were amendments that are not being offered. There was also discussion about rescinding the adoption of the CS, which I think this is sort of a happy median between those options. And I would recommend the members vote yes, but there is objection, so please call the roll.
Three fifties, please.
Okay, we're back on the record. And for the record, the action before us is a conceptual amendment to change the extension date from 2026 to 2025. So striking 2026 and inserting 2025 in its place. And there is objection, so please call the roll.
Representative Prox?
Yes.
Representative Ruffridge?
Yes.
Representative Sadler?
Pass.
Representative Wright?
Yes.
Representative Carrick?
No.
Representative Fields?
No.
Representative Sadler?
Yes.
Chair Sumner?
Yes. Okay.
With five yeas and two nays,
the conceptual amendment number one has passed. Representative Ruffridge, do you have a motion?
Yes, Chair Sumner, I would.
Could we pause, please?
Brief at ease. Thanks. We're back on the record. Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Conceptual amendment number two would revert from to
the amendment first.
Sure. Representative. I will move conceptual amendment number two.
Object.
Thank you. Conceptual amendment number two would restore section one of the education CS, which says, in the manner provided in AS 2320 and for the benefit of the program, the department shall collect from each employee an amount equal to, and here's the change, 0.25, replacing 0.16% of the wages as set out in AS 2320, 175, et cetera, et cetera. So this, again, recognizing the health of the fund, would increase the percentage collection for training without changing the percentage allocation across program recipients.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. Thank you, Representative Fields, for this conceptual amendment. Certainly, actually, like the idea of increasing the dollars that are headed towards technical and vocational education. I think for actually some of the reasons that there was objection to the one-year extension and the fact that there is not really a time crunch maybe put on people to make the change, I felt that the audit was clear that there needed to be changes made to this program. It seems like maybe the time to do that this year is running out. I think that this should be a change that's added as sort of an incentive or an idea that we could encourage some of these changes to be made and have additional dollars available. So I don't think that this is the right time to have that conversation. So I think I'll be opposed to the amendment, but I think it would be a very good thing to look at going forward.
Okay. Representative Carrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just echoing Representative Fields' comments and want to state that I support this amendment. The increase in dollars is something that the fund is healthy enough to sustain by far with plenty of additional room. That's something we heard both in the Department of Labor and Workforce Development subcommittee process and also have heard testified to several times by Dandy Bartolo and the individual who manages the UI Trust as well. So I would encourage members to support this amendment.
If I could just share a little more information before voting, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Raising my hand for the chair's attention. Mr. Chair, I think that given the concerns that I heard expressed in the audit, I also have concerns about increasing the money going. Certainly training for retraining purposes is good, but there are enough questions raised as to the way the money is being dedicated and spent and the results we're getting for it. I think it now, again, is not the time to be raising the money. Maybe in the future, maybe in the short-term future, but not now. So, no. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Fields.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to share an anecdote of a training provider in my district. So back when there was discussion of opening up this program this year, which I'm glad we're not doing that, I had a training provider in my district come to me and say, hey, we'd like to get in on that. The training provider is the Covey Academy with Covenant House. And I told them, I actually will not be fighting to add you to a long list of recipients because as soon as we do that, we're going to have hundreds of training providers from across the state. It's going to be a mess. It's going to be political. However, you know, what Covey Academy is actually doing is trying to partner with existing training centers. So if we were to increase the percentage from 0.15 to 0.26, they would have the opportunity to work with an AvTech and bring AvTech training into the Covey Academy for kids coming out of foster care. This is just one example. I know there are other examples in other communities. But I think when we look at increasing the amount of support for these training programs, we're actually opening the door to creative partnerships with existing training providers and getting at the goal of competitive programs without the destabilizing effect that that kind of statutory change would entail. So just wanted to share that from the perspective of a single provider in one district.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Carrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to add a little bit of clarity about what the audit says and what it does not say. So I think, once again, just as a reminder to folks on the committee, the audit and the annual report both back up that we are training over 8,000 Alaskans a year using TVEP funds, and that those training providers, by and large, with very little and debatable exception, are doing an excellent job getting a good return on investment for Alaska with the TVEP funds. So the question of whether we should increase funds from a very healthy UI trust to support that programming is a very separate question. What the audit does say is that the way we allocate funds is problematic. And so I would be very interested in this committee entertaining conceptual amendments about changing that structure in the future with a reasonable sunset period of more than 1 year, so that we're we're holding accountable for the training providers who have done a great job and who have a good return on investment, but we're also able to actually take stock of those audit recommendations and have a competitive structure, which is the default language in the statute, and something that both Republican and Democrat governors have pushed back on in signing this legislation in the past. So I would definitely encourage members to increase the allocation percentage of funds for the recipients, because the audit and the annual report both back up that the recipients themselves are doing a good job administering funds, again, with very little and debatable exception. However, I do think that this some of the concerns that have come up through this amendment are things we can and should be addressing in a different conceptual amendment.
Okay, thank you. There is objection. Please call the roll.
Representative Fields?
Yes.
Representative Prox?
No.
Representative Ruffridge?
No.
Representative Sadler?
No.
Representative Wright?
No.
Representative Carrick?
Yes.
Two yeas. Oh, sorry. Chair Sumner?
No. So with two yeas and five nays, conceptual amendment number two has not been adopted. Vice Chair Ruffridge, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Chair Sumner. I would move House Bill 55, version D, also referred to as 33-LS0360/D, be advanced from committee as amended with individual recommendations, attached fiscal notes, and allow legislative legal to make any technical or conforming changes as necessary.
Okay, without objection, House Bill 55 will be reported from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the committee file. Okay, we're back on the record. Moving on to House Bill 313, Public Utility Regulatory Cost Charge, a bill by request of the governor. We set an amendment deadline for this bill and received two amendments. We will take those up at this time, but we will also reopen the amendment deadline to Thursday at 4 p.m. Representative Fields?
I'll move Amendment 1.
Object.
Okay, there is objection. Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to offer this. In the first hearing on this bill, I inquired about opportunity to expedite project construction by exempting smaller projects from regulation. So I worked with my utility, Chugach, and Chugach thought that the 15,000 kilowatts or 15 megawatts made sense as a threshold, because that is a that is the threshold in other areas of law for smaller projects. So the amendment before you simply would say the RCA may not require pre-approval under this chapter for construction of an energy facility that generates 15 megawatts or less. So larger projects will still be subject. We're not changing that, but we are expediting project delivery for smaller projects. And I guess I would just note that, in my view, there is a lot of accountability at local utilities because they all have elected boards. And if people who are ratepayers in those areas don't like what the boards are doing, they can fire the board members and hire new ones. And I don't think that we need an additional layer of bureaucracy slowing down project deployment.
Okay. Representative Prox?
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, a 15-megawatt project is a fairly good-sized generation project. And I was not involved with the debate in energy committees a couple of years ago, but there was concern that utilities were becoming overcapitalized. And I guess this would be to Representative Fields. Were you involved with those discussions for the, I believe that was the Rail Belt Reliability Commission?
Yep. Through the chair, I was on the Energy Committee and the Labor and Commerce Committee when that RRC bill passed through there. So I did follow it. 15 megawatts is actually a pretty small project. Just to, for purposes of comparison, the Shovel Creek project that's being contemplated up in the interior is, I think, 120 or 130 megawatts, so a lot larger. The Mount Susitna and the Point McKenzie projects contemplated for South Central are each about 120 megawatts. So 15 is pretty small. I think you would say it's a community scale project. The large ones still will have to be reviewed, and you know, the RRC and the RCA can look at does investing a significant amount of capital and distributing this across ratepayers make sense.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One man's bureaucracy is another man's prudent regulation. The bill, as originally drafted before us, deals with regulatory cost charges and not the threshold for RCA's main mission and scope of authority. So I think whether we should exempt any generating facilities of any size from RCA regulation is a question and might better deserve consideration on its own merit. So I don't think it's a I think it's bridged too far for an amendment to this bill, so I will oppose the amendment.
Well, thank you, Representative Sadler. I certainly think it is pertinent, though. The RCA, essentially through the governor, is coming to us and saying, we have too much work, we need more money. But I would say perhaps they have too much work, they need less work. Anybody else? No? Okay, there is... objection, please call the roll on amendment number one.
Representative Carrick?
Yes.
Representative Fields?
Yes.
Representative Brox?
Yes.
Representative Ruffridge?
Yes.
Representative Sadler?
No.
Representative Wright?
No.
Chair Sumner?
Yes.
5 yeas, 2 nays.
Okay, with 5 yeas and 2 nays, amendment number one has passed. Amendment number two. I will move amendment number two.
Object for discussion.
Okay. Amendment number two addresses experience required by commissioners. It was by request of another member of the legislature. And I offer it here. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I ask who that other legislator was?
Representative Kroc.
Thank you very much.
Representative Prox?
Yes, thank you to the chair, I guess, the sponsor. I kind of understand the logic behind this. My concern would be finding those people. Do we impose a condition that might be hard to meet on the Regulatory Commission of Alaska?
Representative Fields. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I share Representative Prox's perspective. I was trying to think through who on the Chugach board, who I know better because they're in my region, would have met these requirements when they ran the first time, and I actually don't know that any of them would have, maybe one of them. So I think I support the goal, but maybe the way it's written is just a little bit too exclusive.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. I'm wondering if we have anybody online from the RCA that might be able to answer how many of the five commissioners currently would have met this at the time of their appointment.
We do have Bob Doyle, Chair of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Mr. Doyle, if... you can put your name on the record and address the question, please.
Yeah, my name is Robert Doyle. I'm currently the chair of the RCA. Through the chair, to answer the question, right now. The question is, how many of us actually would meet the requirements of having the 5 years of actual experience? That's the way I'm reading it in the field. And I think the limitation there would be the 5 years in utility regulation and utility management. You'd be pulling either from staff of the RCA who have had regulatory experience, or you'd be pulling staff from the utilities. And I do think that you would have a fairly narrow field. And I hope that answers the question. But it's a policy decision for the legislature to make.
Thank you. Representative Ruffridge?
Yeah, just a couple follow-ups, Mr. Doyle. Thank you for being online today. I actually think the question initially was not where would you get them in the future. I was wondering how many of the members of the RCA currently would have met that that goal. And I guess sort of a second question to that would be, do you think that another potential source would be members who are serving on boards of utilities in the state?
Through the chair, I served on a board for 12 years at MEA, 2 years as the chair. That's not 5 years of actual experience in the utility regulation or utility management business. I would interpret that to mean an Ed Jenkins, who's an engineer actually working full-time at MEA, or an actual person that's working full-time at the RCA. So right now, the answer to the question is, I don't believe any of them or any of the current members would have had 5 years of actual experience in a utility and or in regulation, in addition to the Alaska Bar Association and or the various degrees that are listed. I think that's the best I can answer.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the issue at hand before us with this amendment is trying to reach a balance between the desire for highly qualified commissioners in RCA and the need not to make the requirements for that position so high that it's not possible to get a pool of candidates or even any candidates. I believe I may have a Goldilocks solution that may be just in the middle, and I would offer conceptual amendment number one to amendment number two, that being on page one of the amendment on line 13. After the word administration, insert a period and strike all the language down until line 18.
Is there an objection?
Object.
Sure. And if I
okay. Representative Sadler?
Yeah, thank you, the chair, to explain my reasoning. I think there's some concern that the equivalence standard may be currently being interpreted generously. And I think we just heard some concerns voiced that requiring 5 years of actual experience in utility regulation or management might tend to cramp down the potential pool of applicants to people who are either already RCA commissioners, which I don't think that's likely to be. That's kind of nonsensical. We just heard that service on a utility board.
Representative, just 1 second.
Really?
I think your intention is not quite what you stated. Because if you strike the bracketed language, then you would actually be putting that back in.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You would like to restate your conceptual motion.
Thank you. Well, I'll make my intent clear. My intent would be to have the law not include the language on line 14 through 18. So I think you are correct, Mr. Chairman, in the push me, pull you, you know, yes for no language of an amendment. So you're correct. Then I would restate my motion. I move conceptual amendment 1 to amendment 2, that being on page 1 of the amendment on line 13, after the word administration, insert a period, and delete the words, and must have at least 5 years of actual experience in utility regulation or utility management.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Carrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question which applies whether we're talking about the conceptual amendment or the underlying amendment. Maybe Mr. Doyle is the right person to answer. What is actual experience? There's no definition for that in the legislation, as opposed to just stating experience. And I don't know if someone has some clarification on the legal wording of actual experience.
Mr. Doyle, if you heard that and you'd like to opine on it, you can go ahead and put your name on the record again. And
this is Robert Doyle from the RCA. I agree there's not a specific definition in this proposal, but actual to me means 40 hours a week, you know, full-time, 5 years experience in utility regulation. Well, that regulation in the state of Alaska is at the RCA or utility management, and that would be clearly at MEA, Chugach, NSTAR. It would be one of the utilities that would have full-time managers doing it basically 40 hours a week, 5 years in a row.
Just a brief follow-up.
Go ahead.
So, Mr. Doyle, just to restate that, actual experience in the current statute and under this amendment essentially means a full-time job in the practice of either utility regulation and management, or in this conceptual amendment, in the practice of law, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a full-time job, I guess, in other words. Sorry to be wordy.
Yes, I would believe that that's correct. And I believe, this again through the chair, that Representative Sadler is correct. I think that unease right now is maybe the liberal interpretation of what's being bracketed and deleted. But again, that would be up to a governor to appoint and the legislature to confirm based upon that existing language. But the way this proposal reads is that would be deleted. And it would have to be actual experience in just two areas, utility regulation and utility management.
Thank you.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. I think just a question for the maker of the conceptual amendment. So the conceptual amendment would essentially say to be a commissioner on the RCA, you have to have a degree and no experience would ever amount to the fact that you may or may not have a degree. And that is that your intention?
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Ruffridge. That would be the effect of the conceptual amendment I made. As I look at this, you know, kind of on the drawing board, it would be my preference not to have a situation where somebody with nothing but a degree in business administration, fresh out of college, would qualify. Ideally, I would like to have somebody who had a couple years worth of seasoning in the work world, but without more time to try and craft something, I'm not sure I could do that. My concern is to, again, not raise the bar too high to have 5 years of experience in utility management or regulation, and too much at the other end to say that 5 years of working in business administration is equivalent to a degree. So maybe it's not exactly Goldilocks, but I think substantially you're correct.
And Representative Sadler, I would guess that Representative Kronk's intention was that the folks on the regulatory board have more experience with regulation of utilities. And I likely, should this conceptual amendment pass, would withdraw amendment number two, should the body allow. So I would recommend, since we did reopen the amendment deadline, that we perhaps table this amendment. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Chair. I think that's not a bad idea at all. A little bit more time to cogitate in this and come up with the proper language, I think would be useful, so I'd appreciate that. So I withdraw conceptual amendment one to amendment two.
Okay. And then do we have I withdraw amendment number two. Okay. So we are going to set this bill aside for a future hearing. And next, we're going to hold public testimony on SB 147, Reemployment Benefits, from Senator Kaufman. We heard this bill a week ago, and today we're going to hold public testimony and set an amendment deadline. So we will Is there anybody in the room wishing to testify on SB 147? No? And there's, public testimony is now open. Is there anybody in the room wishing to testify? No? And there's no one online. So we will close public testimony. An amendment deadline for SB 147 is being set for Thursday, April 11th at 2:30 p.m. Please get any amendments to my aide before then. Moving on to House Bill 309, Delegation of Routine Optometry Services from Vice Chair Ruffridge. This is the first bill hearing of HB 309. I'd like to invite Vice Chair Ruffridge and his staff to please approach the committee. Put your name on the record and begin your presentation, and ask committee members to please hold questions until the end. And I am going to have to step out for a meeting, so I will turn the gavel over to Representative Wright. Brief at ease.
House Labor and Commerce, come back to back on record. Representative Ruffridge, will you proceed with your presentation?
Yes, thank you, Chair Wright. House Bill 309 is a simple update to the optometry practice to allow the delegation of certain practice duties to an assistant within the optometry practice. It is a necessary update, essentially, to match current business practices within the practice of optometry. And I would like my Chief of Staff, Mr. Sexton, has a brief presentation to go over the bill, and certainly happy to answer any questions at the end.
Thank you, Chair. For the record, Bud Sexton, staff to Representative Ruffridge. So the optometry practice is in current language. They do not have the ability to regulate the delegation of routine tasks for a number of different things that are very routine in the optometry world, and I'll have a slide that actually shows some of the routine tasks. So again, there's many other health professions throughout Alaska and also nationwide that have similar types of delegation authority, and again, this really would look at allowing the optometrists to kind of catch up with some of the statutes that other industries and regulations, other professions currently have. Other healthcare professions in Alaska, again, there's a number of them that have delegation authority, doctors, osteopathic medicine, podiatry, physician assistants, and also under that same bullet point of 08.64.106, ophthalmology also has a similar ability to have delegation authority through their board. Other professions, dental, veterinary, pharmacy, and chiropractic. As an example of some of these routine tasks that we're looking to address in House Bill 309, for anyone that has had doctor visits for your eyes, many of you probably have actually had most, if not all, of these type of tasks as part of your visit. Prescriptions, typical blood pressure screenings, they have automated measurements of the eye. So if you've seen some of those little balloons where you put your face and your chin resting on the bar and they take some of those different automated measurements, different photography and other imaging and medications, and peripheral vision testing, often called field test type of thing. Again, all of these are routinely done by different types of assistants, and of course the results are interpreted by the optometrists themselves. So in the current challenges, and again, if we were to not have House Bill 309, there could be different potential for, patient care visits and other types of things taking much longer than is necessary. Optometrist folks do believe that the field is going to continue to grow into the future. And what this would do is, you know, potentially have different complications that would result if House Bill 309 were not, or something similar, were not able to be put into effect. This bill does not have any impact on billing practices, no additional cost to the patients. And again, we're really looking at making sure that all of the tasks that are delegated are still under the optometrists and their licenses, and so this does not change any of those type of requirements. This bill does have widespread support through the Optometric Association, and again, it really brings it in line with other health-related professions throughout Alaska. And Mr. Chair, we do have a couple of optometrists online for invited testifier, Dr. Brad Cross and Dr. Damian Delser, with your indulgence.
Dr. Bradley Cross, are you on the line?
Yes, through the chair. I'm Dr. Bradley Cross, an optometrist licensed in Alaska, and I'm the current board chair for the State Board of Examiners in Optometry in Alaska. And I'm presenting this testimony in support of HB 309. Optometry is responsible for the majority of primary eye care in the state of Alaska. And we as optometrists have grown as a profession to accommodate the needs of Alaskans. Urban, rural, and remote eye care necessitates skilled practitioners who have a scope of practice that can assure adequate care. We as a profession, as a state board, as a state association, and likely you as state legislators understand and believe that statement. Optometry has shown itself to be economically beneficial to our population, safe, sustainable, and directly accountable to the state board, who is in turn accountable to the legislature and your committee. As you may have seen, an omission in our state board statutes was discovered during our 2023 regulation project relating to telehealth, and with the help of Representative Ruffridge and staff, a simple yet clear solution has been created. This two-page bill will correct the oversight of not specifically spelling out that an optometrist can delegate ancillary testing to an assistant or a technician. This is much like our colleagues in dentistry, medicine, chiropractic, veterinary medicine have done in the past with their specific statutes. It is commonplace in optometry practices across the country to utilize technicians in the daily patient flow. This allows for more efficient use of resources within the practice and allows access to care to not be bottlenecked. As our population age in the state increases and the number of providers actively practicing decreases, it will allow optometrists to practice at an efficient level, and that's more important than ever before. With older populations, more diseases are present, which require more imaging, visual field testing, and more frequent visits than a younger population. And the inclusion of this legislation will ensure that optometrists have the backing of our state statutes to provide high-level care for the patient base that is in most need for those services. Why did this omission occur may be a question on your mind. That's a question I've been pondering myself over the past few weeks. And my conclusion was that in the distant past, there actually was a provision for delegation of tasks by an optometrist to an optician. But as opticianry and optometry have matured and evolved over time, optometry has become much more medically oriented, especially in the past decade. This is a result of our positioning in more locations and certainly in more remote areas than other eye care providers. As our optometric education and continuing education is transformed from optics only based into primary eye care and optical expertise simultaneously, it has also led to the creation of a relatively new position within optometric practices known as optometric technician. And I believe that the American Optometric Association started recognizing that terminology and started a training program within the past decade or so. In order to catch up with the change in the dynamic of how optometry is now functioning, it's time to specifically delegate these tasks to optometric technicians in our statutes. You may hear an argument to the bill stating that it's not specific enough and spelling out how implementation and regulation of this bill will be accomplished. As the current chair of the Optometry Board, I can assure you that we as a board are prepared to draft regulations that spell out the guidelines for how this will be implemented in order to continue our history of protecting Alaskans. We as a board had one of our regular meetings just earlier today, and it was discussed that this project will be on the horizon, and we stand at the ready to address this as soon as we possibly can. On behalf of the Board of Examiners and Optometry, I thank you for taking up this bill and considering it, its merits, and passing it on to become part of our statutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Are there any questions for Mr. Cross? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, through the chair, Mr. Dr. Cross. How would we define an agent of an optometrist? I don't see any place in this bill that requires any kind of business relationship or any kind of symbiotic relationship. Help me understand what might be the sideboards for who an agent of an optometrist might need to be.
So that, as I was defining in my testimony about the optometric technician, that would be the role that we will define in regulation and how that person is trained and certified if necessary, and what their roles will be.
Follow up. Sir, are you saying that an agent would be an optometric technician and that the board would define by regulation what an optometric technician is?
What they are allowed to do is more specific of what the regulation project would define.
Follow up. So in your mind, again, the agent of an optometrist is still a bit of a vague term to me. How might regulations the board would draft for this put some sideboards and some specificity as to what an agent of an optometrist is?
So I think to answer that question, the project would require that we define the agent being the optometric technician, specifically as the assistant to the optometrist, and we would also define what training we're going to require and how they would be overseen by the optometrist with the license.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Cross. We have one more question for you, Representative Carrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a hopefully really easy question. Are optometrists currently required to work within the practice of an ophthalmologist?
No, that is not a requirement.
Okay. And just as a follow-up.
Follow-up.
So for care that takes place in rural Alaska where there is not an ophthalmologist or an optometrist living, can you just describe a little bit more how those routine services might actually work in practice?
So I think that, the type of care that we're addressing here is done by an optometrist. So eye care that's being provided outside the scope of optometry would not be addressed by HB 309.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you. You're right. This is what I was talking about here, Clark. This microphone and
Beef it
we're
is.
Not getting along. No, it's good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We just have problems, the microphone and me. We don't get along.
Understood.
Through the chair, Representative Carrick, I think the question that you were asking actually had to do with how routine services of optometry could be utilized potentially in a telehealth functionality. Mm-hmm. At least that's kind of what I heard. So in this case, a optometrist potentially could delegate a routine service in a rural community to perform a certain test or some sort of diagnostic process that is essentially machine-driven and sends those results to the optometrist. And then the optometrist could read those results and have a telehealth visit. That would still require that technician that's on site to have some sort of training from the optometrist and would be working more than likely under the, well, not more than likely, would be working under the license of the optometrist. And so having this board delegated responsibility available to someone in remote Alaska does have the potential to open up the option for more remote work or telehealth work to happen where somebody on site could do some routine functions and allow an optometrist to do that work remotely.
Okay, appreciate that. Really brief follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Representative Ruffridge. And in so currently, if someone is receiving telehealth services from an optometrist. What is that? What are the restrictions, I guess, on that optometrist's ability to provide those telehealth services?
Through the chair, Representative Carrick, I'll let Dr. Cross answer that. But right now, that's actually some of the impetus behind this bill, is that the Board of Examiners has been unable to draft regulations to answer that exact question because this is missing. But I'll let Dr. Cross
ask. Dr. Cross, did you hear the question?
Yes, I did, through the chair. I agree that telehealth would necessitate that an optometry license be supervising an optometric assistant if they were going to perform a telehealth visit. We were able to draft telehealth regulations last October that do delineate what we can and cannot do in telehealth. And for the most part, we have drafted into regulation that a complete eye exam with determination of a refraction is something we're not allowing to be done through telehealth. So for the most part, the telehealth component for optometry is going to be consultation and follow-up, more so than doing ancillary testing.
Dr. Cross, I thank you for your testimony. Dr. Cross, we do have one more question.
Thank you. Before I go, Mr. Chairman, I have two questions. First, through the chair, to Dr. Croft. I'm sorry?
Croft.
Is there any national certification for optometric technicians?
Through the chair, yes, there is. The American Optometric Association has come up with a program and some guidelines for that certification program.
Follow up.
Would it be appropriate then to have the possession of such a national certification be one of the regulatorily defined requirements for the for someone to function as an optometric technician in Alaska?
So I would say that it would be valuable to have that certification, but a lot of technicians are trained on the job. And, so to put that requirement in there, I think is maybe not absolutely necessary at this point, but is something we could entertain.
Okay. Thank you. And the different question?
Follow up.
I guess, Dr. Cronk, would passage of this bill and the authority given to optometric technicians to do this work, would that result in a lower fees for patients?
It probably would not lower fees from what they are today. It would simply prevent a bottleneck in services, which would create an increase in demand and decrease in supply of patient examination slots, therefore probably increasing the cost if we are not granted the ability to do the delegation of tasks.
So to clarify, so it would not lower costs, but it would prevent increased costs, I think is what you're saying.
Correct. That's my interpretation.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Cross. We do appreciate your testimony. Ms. Elizabeth Stevens, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Please state your name and affiliation. Put yourself on the record.
My name is Elizabeth Stevens, and I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Optometric Association.
And please begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Sumner, Vice Chair Ruffridge, and members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Elizabeth Stevens, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Optometric Association. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on behalf of over 100 Alaska Optometric Association members who provide the majority of primary eye care statewide in both rural and urban communities alike. We would like to thank Representative Ruffridge for sponsoring House Bill 309, which grants the Alaska Board of Examiners and Optometry the authority to draft regulations regarding the delegation of routine optometric services. The Alaska Optometric Association strongly and enthusiastically supports House Bill 309. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Stevens? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Dr. Damian Delzer, are you on the line?
Chair Wright, Vice Chair Ruffridge, and distinguished members of the committee, good afternoon. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in support of HB 309. My name is Damian Delzer. I'm a licensed optometrist from Fairbanks. I am the president-elect of the Alaska Optometric Association and had the privilege of serving as the immediate past chair of the Alaska Board of Examiners in Optometry. I'm testifying in full support of HB 309, which is legislation requested by the Board of Examiners in Optometry due to a recent research opinion by the Department of Law addressing telehealth issues. The opinion was that the statute needed clarification regarding delegation of routine pretesting by optometric assistants. Optometry has utilized assistants as standard of care and industry standard practice for decades preceding my graduate professional education, and I personally have utilized assistants for the entirety of my over 30-year career in Alaska, as well as previously in the armed forces. Many states recognize this longstanding industry standard, and the use of assistants is a foregone conclusion in the delivery of eye care, not requiring any specific statute language. I hold licenses in North Dakota and Montana, and neither require such specific language and allow the board to regulate the delegation of routine tasks. It is an implied practice, just as we have done for many decades in Alaska. Like most professions, both within and outside of medical care, valuable team members allow for improved efficiencies and greater utilization of a professional's time and unique skills. Assistants improve access to nearly all types of medical care, as was presented earlier. Specific Alaska statutes address this across nearly all healthcare fields. The utilization of optometric assistance is universal throughout optometric practice in all states, helping to contain costs and improve patient access. Optometric assistants will often perform routine pretesting tasks under the supervision of the licensed doctor. These tasks may include visual acuity assessments, much like you would have done at the Department of Motor Vehicles, measurement of glasses, documenting medical issues past and present, as well as current medications, allergies, taking ocular photography and other non-invasive scans, as well as helping to assist patients to and from the examination rooms. In some practices, they will also serve as a scribe, making notes as the doctor examines a patient. They often will retrieve phone messages from patients regarding refills and convey messages to patients regarding recommended follow-up. This thoughtful and simple legislation will provide the statute clarification as recommended by the Department of Law to allow the specific language for the board to regulate the ongoing delegation of safe, supervised, non-invasive assistance for busy practices, which in turn continues to improve access for the residents and visitors of Alaska to much-needed eye care. Fortunately, this simple legislation accomplishes this in a manner as also recommended by Director Rob, and at no cost to the state nor cost to patients or their insurers. The Alaska Optometric Association and its membership fully support this legislation and are extremely grateful to the sponsor, Representative Ruffridge, and to this committee for this opportunity to promptly address this issue. Thank you for your kind consideration and time this afternoon, and I remain happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And through the chair, Dr. Belzer, I guess I'll ask the same question I asked the previous gentleman about the value of using national certification of optometric technicians as a qualifier for someone to be to be allowed to practice such services under regulations that the board would promulgate. Would that national certification be helpful or appropriate?
I think that the national certification clearly does have a role. Most of the optometric assistants will receive their training on the job, and as they go through gaining additional experience, they have the opportunity to sit for the various levels of examinations that are given by the American Optometric Association to obtain additional qualifications. Again, that experience is gained on the job, and so having that as a prerequisite, I think, would be quite a barrier for those individuals. But I feel that those again, additional levels of expertise granted to those folks through examination provides great opportunities for the employee to advance in their education.
Okay. And if I could probe that just a bit, Mr. Chair.
Uh-huh.
Sir, Dr. Belcher, is it an escalating or the examinations you described, are those something that happens every year? People go level by level, or give me some more information about that examination by the National Association.
Thank you, through the chair. The association does have, I believe, currently four levels of examination for para-optometric certification. Our colleagues on the ophthalmology side also have a similar program and can start with, again, no certification, and then they can move on to certified ophthalmic assistants. And if they wish to, they can also move on to become certified ophthalmic technicians. Those are not requirements, but they are, again, excellent opportunities for the assistants to the employees and to show their additional qualifications and again, likely gain additional compensation for their time and pride in their accomplishment as they gain more and more skill.
Well, if I may follow up. So it's a fair assumption that a tech who got increasing levels of certification would be compensated at a higher level in a practice?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative. That is certainly the case in many of the offices that I've had the privilege of working in the past and of those that I'm aware of. Indeed, they often will pair a additional level of certification with a raise.
Thank
you for the question.
Thank you, Dr. Delzer. We do appreciate your testimony. Just want to thank Ms. Glenn Saviors, Deputy Director, for being here for any questions from the department. And now we're moving on to public testimony. I will now open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room who would like to publicly testify? Seeing none. Anyone on the line who would like to publicly testify? None online. I will now close public testimony. I'm setting an amendment deadline to HB 309 for Thursday, April 11th at 11 a.m. That concludes our business for today. Seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn at 4:21 p.m.